almost finished with this book. Probably 2 or 3 weeks we'll be done with the book, and then we'll be into the text. So
49.
Yep. Hopefall. We just got started with that. Now, this class, it may not apply quite as much, but there's some new policies that are being instituted by the administration. You might have heard about it already or not. I don't know, but I'll go ahead and make these announcements as it applies. And I don't know if Phil's on tape this time or not. He probably will be again. It's going to apply more to the tape students and makeup. This is dealing with assignments and makeup tests. In this class, we really haven't had much problem because everybody's, you wouldn't be this far if you didn't have discipline. So it really hasn't been a problem. But we've had problems in a lot of the other undergraduate classes and just, diligence in getting tapes in on time, getting tests in on time, and having to make all kinds of exceptions and so forth. And so I'll just announce this since we want to announce it in all the classes and trust that you'll take care of it. The tests, making up announced and unannounced tests. If you're making up an unannounced test on tape, take the test immediately. We don't usually have the problem in this class. And when if you ever should have to make up a test in this class, be sure, one thing we want to emphasize now is when you make up the test, write down the date that you make it up on the test as well as the date the test was taken. In other words, when it goes in the box, I need to know the date that you took the test to make sure that it's in within a week. You have 1 week, of course, after the test is given, and for a regular student, if you make up a test, it's an automatic full grade drop. In other words, just from the fact that you made it up. But up to a week, and then after that, you get an F. So it's a quantum jump, after 1 week, downward. Tape students, we're going to try something new on this. Tape students have 1 week after the class to make up the test without penalty, since you've got 1 week anyway as a tape student. Then the next week after that, you've got another week for one grade drop, and then after 2 weeks, it's an F. In other words, they just shift. Well, before, I think it was just kind of all put in the same category, and the tape students still had one week. Now we're giving them a week's grace, since we're giving them a week's grace on making up tapes anyway. Because the reason you're a tape student is because you couldn't be there at the time, So you're having to take them a little bit later. So I think this is going to work well. Been trying to find something that's fair and equitable and doesn't give people unfair advantage and so forth. So that's what the policy is for tape students. Tape notes. In the past, we've always had 1 week to get tape notes in, otherwise you don't get credit for them. Then we kind of changed that, loosened it up, and had, you could turn it in any time. But the trouble was that people began to start, and then they had like 20 tapes to make up 2 days before the end of the semester, and it just doesn't work. So we're going to go back to 1 week. You got 1 week to make up tape notes. If you miss a class, make up the tape within 1 week. And again, when you turn in your tape notes into my box, some of you guys just, that I know regularly are in this situation. I just see your notes and there's no problem. But put the date on your notes when you put them in my box so that you'll be sure you're certain to get your full credit. In other words, if you got it done within a week, put it down. Because I might, suppose you missed a class on Friday, you got it made up the next Friday, and you put it in my box on Friday, but I didn't, it was after class and I didn't get my box until Monday. If you put the date on it, then I'll know you had it in a Friday and didn't turn it in Monday morning late. So that's the reason for that. So those are the basic things. And like I said, in these Greek and Hebrew classes, most of my classes I haven't had too much trouble because it's been survival of the fittest anyway. You don't get to this point if you, especially language classes, if you get behind, you don't stay in. So it's got a kind of a self-policing factor to it. Okay, so but they wanted us to make that announcement, so everybody's clear on that. All right, then, we're in lesson 49 then. In this semester, we're going to finish the book up first, just as we have been, and then we're going to be moving into some other things. Oh, yes, for last semester, your tests and makeup notes, everything are in the library, so I think they'll leave them in there for a few days, but you probably better pick them up pretty quick. I don't know what they do with them after that. I think they run file them after a while. So they're all available. And I did drop your lowest grade on equivalent to a quiz. In other words, I went through. I didn't do that for Greek because we didn't have enough tests, but for Hebrew I did. Yeah, we only had three tests in Greek, so I didn't.
It would have been last.
Yeah.
It would have been great.
Yeah, the Greek one was a little bit harder, I think. Okay. Yeah, I don't want to do that. You need the highest. Okay, lesson 49 on the HOFAL we just gotten started with. And I don't think I gave you the assignment yet, did I? Did I tell you which one?
No.
Okay, I'll do that first now so I may be sure not forget it. On lesson 49, part A, do 1, 5, and 10. 1, 5, and 10 for part A. Part B, 1, 7, 12. 1, 7, 12 for part B. Part C, number 1, number 7, number 14. 1, 7, 14 for part C. And D, nothing, part E, all of that. That's your start reading. Get into Judges there, it'll be interesting. Samson and the riddle. Yeah. Tune in next week, same time, same station. All right. So let's go back with a discussion of the HOFAL here. Now, we've just gotten started, I think, talking about this with the forum, so I think I'll just start at the beginning again. As in the PL-PUL relationship, there is for each HIFIL verb a passive counterpart of the type called HOFAL. So HOFAL just passes with HIFIL. Fortunately, though, with HOFAL, the forms are such that you don't get into all the complications you did with HIFIL. And so he gives in one chapter the whole works. In other words, I don't know how many chapters we had on HIFIL. 6 or 7, something like that. Here's just one chapter that covers all the HOFAL. And you can see here your regular, one gutter, one nun, three aleph, one yod and wow, three hays, the hollows, and the geminates are all put in one chart. And it just happens because of the way that the syllables work and what kind of vowels there are there and so forth. So you can see the examples here, and there's not too much to say. The basic pattern is O-A, with a kamatz chatuf in the first syllable and the pathak in the second, and a first closed syllable. So you're adding a hey to it, and with a kamatz chatuf, putting a shwa on the first letter of the root, and then pathak on the last syllable. That's the basic pattern. Now, of course, there are some complications, but they're not really horrendous ones like some of the ones we've seen before. So the regular form, hishmid, the perfect is hoshmad, and the imperfect, yoshmad, and the participle, moshmad. So you just, you know, just substitute the hey, the oath, and the name, and you've got it. For that, you know, for the third person form at least. And then the one guttural, we had hemid for the hifil, but the perfect, the hofal is just ho'amad, and ho'omad, excuse me, that's a chatef kamas chatuf there. So ho'omad, yo'omad, mo'omad. One nun, that's a little bit trickier. Of course, the nun assimilates, so you get higid, and then you get a slightly different change here. You get hugad. You get a kibbutz. You don't see too many kibbutzes. And it's a kibbutz and then the pathak. And then the dagesh is there because of the nuns being assimilated. The dagesh and the gimel there. So hugad, yugad, mugad. But once you've got that, everything follows suit. Three aleph, just a quiescent aleph at the end. So there's nothing much to say there. Instead of pathak, it becomes kamatz before there on the second syllable. The one yod and one wow, you've got whole reed, and the perfect, you get hurad, yurad, and murad. You get a shurek there instead of a kamatz chatuf. Three hay, hivna for the hifil becomes hovna and yovna. And movneth, there's a slight change in the second syllable. It's not quite consistent all the way through on those, but it's like what we've seen already with the three hays. The hollow verb hekim, we've got hukam, yukam, mukam. The pattern is pretty much the same as the pattern for the one yod and one wow above. And that, well, of course, if you happen to see one of these in the hifil, you're going to have some kind of confusion between those two types as a result of it. You probably won't know by looking at it if it's a verb you haven't seen before, which it is. Geminate, same kind of pattern there too. So you've got husav, yusav, musav. So that can potentially be a problem. Okay, but at least it's all there in black and white, you know, in one chart. Then for the rest of the paradigm, that's not too hard. The examples will pretty much tell you how to do it. For hoshmad, for example, in the perfect, you've got hoshmad, Hoshmada, Hoshmata, Hoshmans, etc., just like you've seen before. They just put dotted lines there because the rest of the paradigm is like that. The imperfect would be Yoshmaz and Toshmadi and Toshmadna, the kind of the critical forms, the ones where the expected differences are. Participle, Moshmav, and you've got two forms for the feminine, Moshmedeth and Moshmada. So that's pretty straightforward. Moshmadim, no real problems there to be concerned about. They give you the three hay there and the one guttural. Those, again, typical changes, typical problems that we've seen before. So you can just kind of go through those. Not going to see a lot of whole falls, to be honest, anyway. You know, it's probably not worth... It's nice that they're not too difficult, because it's not worth spending a lot of time for something you're not going to see it as often. Now, as far as syntax, the passive of the hif field, the whole fall offers no problems in translation when the hif field is simply a transitive verb. So hishmiv means he destroyed, hoshmav means he was destroyed. So if the hif field is just, you know, transitive verb, then just passive form, no problem. Hishlik, he threw, and hoshlak, he was thrown. Horith, he brought down, and hurath, he was brought down. So that's pretty straightforward. Now, but when the hifil of the verb is capable of a double object construction, that's going to potentially generate a certain kind of a problem. If you've got a kind of a hifil verb that takes both two objects, you know, he caused so-and-so to do so-and-so to so-and-so, whatever, that's going to get into a question of, when you convert it to the passive form, which part of it goes passive? The causation part or the regular verb part? And the pattern is it's the causation part that goes passive. So an example here. Hera'ah es ha'ish es ha'or. He showed the man the light. There's a hifil form. He showed the man light. Or literally, he caused the man to see the light. So the verbal idea is he caused to see. Now, to put it in the passive, it's the causation part that gets passivized, as it were. And so now we're going to say, Hor'a ha'ish et ha'or. The man was shown the light. Or literally, the man was caused to see the light. So your passivizing comes in the phrase was caused. The to see still stays as an infinitive kind of a translation in English. And that's the same, you know, caused to see or was caused to see. The to see stays the same, but the causation is the part that goes passive. So that's a pretty simple way to, if you just remember the causation part goes passive, you'll come out right all the time. Okay, then he gives a few more examples. He'evir et ha'am et ha'nahar. He brought the people to across the river. He caused them to cross the river, in other words. And then ho'ovar ha'am et ha'nahar. The people were brought across the river. Or they were caused. You see, they were caused to cross the river. So the idea, the passive idea again, is with the causation element. It's not too bad, because in English you usually use an infinitive cause too when you're translating it overtly like that, and you can't really put an infinitive in a passive form anyway. So it's not. I don't think it's too much of a problem. It says, or when one of the two possible objects is omitted, we have he'avir es ha'am. He led the people across, and then the passive ho'ovar ha'am. The people were led across. And again, it's the causation element that's become passive. They were caused to cross. Hera es ha'or. He showed the light, or he caused the light to be seen. Now we don't have a direct object, but we've got hora ha'or. Now light is the subject. The light was caused to be seen. So again, the light is being caused to be seen. And the light is the subject of this passive verb form. But you're always going to, if you can just get that idea, put the causation element in the passive, you pretty well come out straight. There's not too much else you can do with it that makes sense, you know, in English anyway. I don't know how you get the passive idea in the verb form, since it's, you're always translating it as an infinitive anyway. So there's note two, the impersonal construction with a retention of the eighth, the object marker, hu gav lo et divarim, he was told the words. Okay, it's kind of impersonal because there's no personal subject listed here, and The words were told to him, you might say, is kind of the idea. So he was told the words. He was told. He was caused to. I don't know how this word would be derived, but he was caused to understand the words, or you know, perceive it, or something like that. This is more of though. Trying to get the wording on this what I want, but. Yeah, that's something like that. It's more the hymn is more. Well, see, you've got lo there to him, and that's kind of giving it was told to him the words, or you know, that we're getting the he was told just because of the lo there, but we're not getting it from who God. We're getting it from the lo. So it was told to him the words. That'd probably be a good way to express it. That gives you that impersonal idea. It was told to him the words. Mm-hmm. Yes, Peter?
Does this occur like in the first and second person? The verb form? I can see this now in the third person.
This last example only, you mean?
No, he led the people across, the people mm-hmm. who led across.
Right.
If you're having this in a first person.
Oh, I led the people across?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the people were led across. Yeah, that would happen too, the same kind of situation there.
So the whole fall could be in the first person?
Yes. Oh, you mean the Hophal part. Well, the Hophal part, let me see. Yes, you could. Suppose it said, he led me across. Then you could say, I was led across. See, it's in other words, what was the direct object in the original sentence now becomes the subject of the Hophal verb in the passive sentence.
So I was led across, it would be with the first person.
Form of the Hophal, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, any other question? Right. Yeah, if. Right. Because in the whole fall, it's not going to be double object anymore, really. One of those objects is going to get passivized and the other one isn't. But some hifil verbs. He showed the man the light. What we've got there is two direct objects. He showed the man and he showed the light. See? And literally showed them, you know, the real idea is he showed the light to the man. But the way the verb is set up, you see, you've got two direct objects, eth ha'ish and eth ha'or. Now the question is, which one of those two becomes the subject of your passive verb form? You know, and you're converting one of these double object deals to the passive. And most of the languages are that way. The Greek, the same thing. There's only one of them that's going to get, is qualified to become the subject of a sentence like that. And so the man was shown the light is what you end up with. And what you'd probably do if you wanted to say the light was shown the man, you'd probably put to the man and put the indirect object there and set up a different construction. So you can not, it's not you can't say that, you should say it differently with a different construction. Okay.
So is that kind of ambiguous then?
Right. It is ambiguous because it's not going to be word order really that's going to. You're probably going to see the first thing though, it's probably going to pretty much follow English word order. In other words, the first thing that comes is the person, and then the second thing is the object. That's usually the way it is too with these double accusatives. Usually one of the accusers is of a person, the other one's of a thing. And you're performing an action for a person, you know, teach the man the lesson or something, you know. That's usually the way it's seen anyway. Yeah, right. Exactly. It shows you how much, yeah, exactly. All it's looking at is grammar, it's not looking at syntax. I mean, you'd have to program it to be able to recognize words and what classes of words refer to people. Yeah, yeah. You know, it makes you appreciate what kind of a brain the Lord's given us, even if you don't get everything right on the test every time. Give the same test to a computer and you're in trouble. Okay, vocabulary. First verbs, we've just got some regular old call verbs here. Mashal, to rule, to have dominion over, and takes its object with be, to rule, and so it literally it's kind of got the idea of ruling in somebody. Yashar, to be pleasing or agreeable. Katsaf, to become angry against, and so forth. We're using preposition all against, so you become angry upon somebody. Shakan, to settle down or dwell. I thought we had that before, maybe we didn't. chazak, to become strong, firm, or hard. I think we had the word for strength. And haga, to mutter, roar, moan, sigh, meditate, imagine. There's lots of possibilities there. And meditate, imagine, I think they've got the idea, you know, they talk about the prophets, the peep and mutter and stuff, and some of the heathen kind of sounds and so forth they're making in their meditations. There may be a connection with that. Some nouns. Arye means lion. There's no plural form for that one, but then they've got Ari, it's another form for lion. And that's got Aryoth for plural. Eighth means time or appointed time, as a noun now. And notice this, it's got an ayin instead of the aleph, so don't confuse it with the object marker. Or with the preposition with. Then Gidi means kid of goats and so forth. Eda, congregation or assembly, used pretty frequently. Bahur, young man. And then some miscellaneous here. You've got Arael means uncircumcised, figurative in after deficient. It's kind of interesting. And then Alkane, therefore. Kind of upon thus, the idea upon thus, so forth. And then proper names. Samson here would be Shimshon. So they're both sheens there. Yes, question?
No, I don't think that's the right one. Shamish.
Shamish. That's very possible. Very possible. I don't know if I've ever looked up the meaning of Samson. Do they all relate it to son?
There were two meanings. One had to do something strong or something.
Oh.
But I don't remember the root. The root was from Shem.
Mm-hmm. Shem. Mm-hmm. Well, it's very possible. It'd be one of the most logical candidates. Okay. Timnatha. Timnatha, town held by the Philistines. And we've got for the Philistines itself. Philistim. First Shua is going to be vocal, and second one silent. Philistim. Mm-hmm. Question? Oh yeah, it's a hard pay. Thank you. Yeah, Philistim. You got to watch that because when you're used to English transliteration, you know there are times it'll be softened though if there's a word before it that ends in a vowel or something. So the God can soften it itself. Yeah, question? Okay, Philistim. Okay, some of the exercises then, I signed them. I don't know how many of these I want to go through. Next subject is the Hith file. So, it's a whole different ball game. Let me see, we've got half an hour left. Yeah, I think I'll give you some mercy, and we'll go ahead and start the exercise tomorrow and look over here at the HIF field, or HIF file. HIF file. I don't know if it is more merciful or not.
Now we have to write them out instead of...
Oh, yeah. I'm kind of tossed here. See, this first one, you have to do some conversion. I suppose we could go ahead with B, though. That's just translation. Why don't we do B and C? We'll do B and C, and then we'll do the others. But A is where you're having to transform, so I want you to go ahead and do that. In other words, you're taking hit field and converting it to whole fall. And that's going to involve changing the subject and objects around and so forth. So I'd rather have you work on that and think about it. But B we can do. So John, let's try number one under B. Okay, Hutsalnu. So you got a pass up in
there. Right. Oh, okay.
Okay. Hutsal. Hutsal. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we've had this verb before or not. Have we? Was it?
Oh, that's right.
Well, I think it's... Well, yeah, it's a Hifil form. That's a Hifil form. It's a 1 nun originally, I think.
1 nun.
Where did you have it in the previous vocab? They just gave it as a Hifil, didn't they?
Yeah.
Okay. And did they mention its root? Parentheses? I'm trying to find it.
It is to be rescued, not solved.
Not solved, okay. It should be a 1 nun.
Yeah, it doesn't have a call. It's got Nipal.
Okay. Yeah, but see, that's the reason for the kibbutz there, is the 1 nuns get that, and they get the dogation, the first letter there.
So, we were rescued?
We were rescued. Right, exactly. We were rescued. So, passive form, first person plural. We were rescued or delivered. Okay, number 7, Tony. One little word.
We will be able.
Okay, that's good, except that it's third person plural. They will be able. Yeah. If it had the nun in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so Yokolu is just, that's just a call form.
Yeah.
Threw that in there just to trick you, I guess. Okay, and then number 12, Eric. Okay. Okay, I didn't write it down here. Means to be canceled or annulled. And, this is one of those, you know, it's obviously a participle. And the form that it's got can be either a hollow, geminate, or one yod, or one wow. So just looking at it, I'd have to look it up and find out which it is.
The broken covenant?
Yeah, the broken covenant, or the canceled covenant, or just no covenant. Is a geminate? Okay.
Hey, Resh, Resh.
Okay, RR. Okay.
Oh, the name is...
The mame is from, the mame is from the participle. See, this is a whole file participle, so the mame is going to be a part of the participle. And then the hay is just the article. And the kamate in the end is the feminine form to conclude bereath. So the verb was parar, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. And... the trouble is to look at one of these guys. You see, this is one of the areas where if you don't know what the verb is, there's at least three options with exact, you know, exact same patterns. In other words, you could have had it, the verb could have been yapar, one yod. It could have been hollow, could have been, you know, poor or fear. So, so happens to be a geminate. This is where the fun comes. Yes. Okay, the translation would be the annulled covenant or the canceled covenant, or would you have the broken covenant? I suppose you could have it broken in a certain sense. If you understand it. Yeah, it's an adjective modifying covenant. But remember, a participle can be an adjective. It's good to give you one like this, you know, because you have to combine what you knew about participles and how they function together to see how this fits. Okay, any other questions there? Okay, number 1 under part C. I guess Peter's up next.
Mama Cho, Tim Cho, Johnny.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. I'll give you a hint that first hey is interrogative.
All right.
Okay. And there's a defective form here for this first mashul. Yeah, you usually see a cholam wow in the second syllable instead of just a cholam. Infinitive absolute.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a right. Just a call imperfect. Okay.
That's
yeah, banu would be, this word mashal uses bait with its object, so
yeah.
Rule over us, something like that.
Okay, so will you truly?
Yeah, right. Will you indeed rule over us, or will you truly rule over us? Will you really rule over us?
Ruling, will you rule over us?
Yeah, literally, ruling, will you rule over us? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And it's possible that this could also be, will she rule over us too, but
yeah,
we won't. This particular imperfect form could either be 3FS or 2MS. So, assuming you're talking about a woman.
This would be interrogative.
Yeah, that would fit with the interrogative, all right. Some of the men said when Deborah became judge or something. Okay, so either will you indeed rule over us, or ruling will you rule over us, or will she indeed rule over us is another possibility. Yeah. That's the thing. He's trying to give you what you're going to see in the real text. You know, you can't. They're not all sorted out according to the Hifield and Hofal, where they're all mixed together. So you have to get your eyes sensitized, as it were. Okay, number seven, then, Doug. Okay. Yeah, it is him. Mm-hmm. Okay, the first verb is, it's from Hazak. And this is an imperative, plural. Yeah, it's imperative. And it's to plural group, so.
Be strong.
Mm-hmm. Get it now?
Yeah.
Okay, the all is just your negative, and remember how you make a negative command? So this is kind of continuing command mode, but we're using an imperfect with all for a negative command. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good examples here, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't fear. Be strong and fear not, or do not fear. Right, because I am with you. Good. Ki ani itakim. Good. So, be strong and fear not, for I am with you. Verse, or number 14, the last one we had there. Christ, that one for everybody. That's nice.
Why is the box F? How it be? Why is them also Minka all on his bake?
Because Ms. Bayach. Bayach, yeah. Papa heard you there. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Part of a narrative, so.
Okay.
pink daughter's my kid, and put him placed him
in
an offering on the altar.
Placed it as an offering, or him as an offering on the altar. This wouldn't be my kid though, just be the kid, because that here it goes part of the noun. That's kind of tricky. So he slaughtered the kid and placed it as an offering upon the altar. What's that?
The article would.
Right. Yeah. The article would do that too, because you wouldn't have the article on it. It would be definite automatically. Good. Any other questions? Okay. What's that? Yeah, as a sacrifice, right. Well, yes, it's a good question. Yeah, you can treat it that way, placed it as sacrifice on the altar. But usually don't, you know, that would kind of be a double. The object is really otho, and then this other is just an adverbial modifier. The whole phrase would be considered an adverbial modifier, I guess. And in other words, the noun is kind of functioning. It's not really an object, but it's functioning like a modifier or something. Placed it in a sacrifice, placed it as a sacrifice. Could even consider it that, or you could consider it an adverbial prepositional phrase with no preposition. An understood preposition. Okay. All right, well, we'll do the other two sections tomorrow, part A and part E. And let's move to the hith file. It's one of the most fun ones, even though it's not very frequent. Okay, section 177. Relatively infrequent, hith-phial verbs are distinguished by the prefixal element hith and the doubling of the second root consonant. So you get hith plus the doubling of the consonant. And since it's a closed syllable that's attached to the front, it results in lots fewer complications again, because you stick a closed syllable on, it's kind of a self-contained unit, and it doesn't interfere with a lot of other stuff. Okay, and so the complications you have are usually the same kind of complications you would get anyway. However, things that have something wrong near the end of the word, that's where you run into problems. So your three hays and your geminates are the only two categories that are listed here. The rest of them, not much problem, because anything that involves the front part doesn't give you complications because of the closed syllable. The stuff that involves the last part, geminate, you know, double two letters or the three hay, that's where you get complications. So the regular root type, we've got hith gadale. So your pattern is the closed syllable with hirik, and then pathak, and then seri, hith gadale. And imperfect, yith gadale, imperative, hith gadale, infinitive construct, hith gadale, and the participle mith gadale. So everything's the same basic pattern, as long as they're regular. Then the three hays, you get your by now familiar problem with the last part, but still the front part's fine. So you get hith gala, and then the imperfect yith gale segol, and the imperative hith gale seri, infinitive construct hith galoth, and the participle mith gale segol there. So the typical problem with the vowel just before the last hay. You've seen there. The geminates, hith galeo, and yith galeo, hith galeo for the imperative, hith galeo for the infinitive construct, and the participle mith galeo. And that one's not too bad. The trick is that the geminates look regular. Huh? Oh, hith paleo. I'm sorry. Why did I say that? Maybe you're right. I hadn't thought about it that way. I think I was looking up the previous line though with the gimel up there. Yeah. Hit paleo. Yeah. Thank you. It does look like a G upside down.
And then
yeah. And you're used to it. Your brain is already scrambled when you're looking at Hebrew anyway. Okay, in regard to the formation, the following points should be noted. And some of these are really interesting, and if you don't know about them, they can really frustrate you. Especially this first point. With roots beginning with a sibilant, in other words, something that's got an S sound to it, either Tzavi, Sin, Shin, Zion, or Samach, all of them where you're putting your teeth together, you know, make the sound. There is regularly a metathesis, I guess you call it, of this consonant and the tau of the prefix. In other words, they swap places. The tau of the prefix and that S sound that starts the word switch places. And so instead of, here's an example. Instead of hith-shamer, it's hish-tamer. See what happens? And it reverses. Now that, if you don't know that that's going on, can you imagine how long a person would look trying to find what the root of this thing was if he didn't know about that? Because it's actually swapping the thing that's part of the root and the thing that's part of the prefix. So, hish-tamer. And then a further assimilation takes place wherein a zion plus a tau will become a zion plus a dalet. In other words, first it was tau zion, and then it got reversed to zion tau, and then it gets reversed, changed to zion dalet. So you started out with his zaker, and then it becomes his taker, but then it becomes his daker. Notice the dalet there in that last form in the Hebrew. I don't know why he didn't put these all in Hebrew instead of these transliterations, but I don't know. Still got this problem with those transliterations. But his daker from the original, and they see the original verb is zakar, you see. And you'd probably never guess that. Okay. And then another one will happen here with a tzadi plus tau, and it changes to a tzadi plus tate, you see. And so that can be a little tricky too. You get a tate involved instead of a tau. And that can be a problem too, because the original tau of the hith part is not even there. Now it's a tate. So hits tadek. Yeah, hits tadek. And notice that's a tate instead of a tau there. Don't ask me why.
So what happened there? I didn't quite follow what that is.
Okay. What happened, first of all, is... Yeah, let's just take this verb itself instead of all these. I think the problem you're having is with all these transliterations. Okay, the verb is sadak, you know, so that's what we start off with in this one. Okay, and so to make that a hith pael, we'd put a hith on the front, you know. So what you would have expected would be hith sadak. That's what you'd expect, you know, from that verb. Taking sadak and making hit by all the hit sadak. But instead, what happens is that, first of all, these two swap places. So, you know, because it's a syllabus, so that would have been hit. Yeah. You know, that's the regular irregularity. Okay. So you got hit sadak. But then, in addition to that, instead of a tau there, they go to tate. So it's a different letter entirely. So you get hit and then a tape. See? Tade. So there's actually been a change in this letter from one T sound to another. No, because this would have been with the dagesh, you know, because of the full syllable. So, you know, there can be all kinds of speculations raised about that, you know, what's actually happening and so forth, but that's what turns out to happen.
I think it's genetic dyslexia.
Yeah. Could be. It's funny as that sounds. Who knows? You know, but it's just like dyslexia with a reversible thing. But I think part of it is the sound. You know, this doesn't happen with other. It's only with syllables that it happens, and it may be just because they don't like to stop with a T, hard T, and then go to an S sound. But they got a letter that does that. Saudi does that anyway. Don't ask me. But it's consistent with these. But you have to really watch them. This is probably one of the trickiest ones to get a tau and a tate in it. You see, the sound doesn't make any problem. If you're pronouncing, it's no real problem. But if you're trying to find roots and looking it up and so forth, it can really be a problem. We haven't seen that before. Yes?
Now, this is always with a sadi we're going to find a tau.
Right. It's with the, when you get sadi tau, you know, when you got that swapping and got a tadi tau, then that becomes a tet. Now, I'm not sure if this is going to happen every single time that happens. I don't know if you see enough of them to really tell for sure. This is probably one of them, you know, this may be the only verb that it happens with. But they, you know, I don't know. But he's pretty much laying it out as a rule. There's regularly, and yeah, it's definitely regular with syllabants. I'm just not sure about this last, but further assimilation takes place, and I don't know if that's going to happen every single time it happens. There really isn't any reason why you can't leave it like this, you know. Other assimilations occur sporadically, so apparently this is a regular one then. But this may be the only verb that's this problem with. Yeah, do you have? That could get fun. Well, that you wouldn't have the problem with the tau then. Well, you might. Yeah, you might still have the same problem. Okay. The question is how many of these verbs that occur in the hithpile so that the actual instance comes up. Apparently this one does. Okay, and then you have some more sporadic ones like hin ve for the more regular hith na ve. So what's happened there is you've assimilated the tau into the nun, put the dagesh in the nun, and shortened the syllable. So that's more of an irregular situation. Mm-hmm. Assimilating the tau. Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing.
Well, let me put it this way. The hith pael doubling goes on the second element in the root. In other words, looking back up at your pattern, unfortunately, you use begat kapat so frequently here that there's a problem. But it's on the hith gadel, it's on the dalet. That's the one that's doubled. And see, your begat kapat is generally going to have a dagesh lene on it because of the closed syllable before it. If it happens to be a begat kapat letter that begins the verb, like Gadel would.
I was looking at in that bay down here, but I guess if you read farther, it says the regular form of it would be hit nabe.
Yes.
And apparently that tau is being swallowed up in the noon.
Right.
That first form threw me off, and I thought, well,
okay,
it would be all forte then.
Yeah, no. The bay in like a hif nave, the form that would have been hif nave, excuse me. That base is the one that's got the doubling
right.
From the hif file form, and then the form hinave is an assimilation of the tau into the nun there, and there's a dagesh in the nun because of that. So that's a different dagesh. That's not the normal hif file dagesh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, out of the examples there, all three of them have a begat kafat in the first radical, and that can be a problem. But it's the second one. So you see the lamas in both those last two. You know that's not a begat kafat, so that dagesh has to be a forte.
Yeah, that's throughout the whole paradigm
just got
over
there, too. Oh,
no? Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's good to take note of that, then. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's that second one that's doubled. Okay. Get through a few more of these comments. With geminate roots, the doubling of the middle root consonant is often given up, as in the PL verb. We ran across this with BL when preceding a shwa. So we got hith chanani, and instead of hith chanani, notice what's happened though. You've got the doubling given up, and you just write, in other words, if you double, the problem might be this. You'd actually have three nuns in a row, in effect. If you look at that second word there, the one that it would have been, if you've got a nun with a dagesh and then another nun following it, that's the first one's doubled, and the next one follows it, you have three of them in a row, in effect. So that may be the problem. They don't like three of them in a row. You have a prejudice against the number three or something. Okay? So it's often given up, and that happened to PL too. The roots three, yes, Eric. Well, yeah, that would be a proper ending for. Let me check here. Yeah.
That was so
What is it? The only thing is, this might be a suffix on the infinitive. He is doing something. That's the only thing I think of. Yeah. Infinitive construct with a suffix.
That's why the Shua
started. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been shortened too. It's probably what it is. See, these things will start all looking alike, you know. In other words, the problem is the infinitive construct looks so much like the other, but when you put a suffix on it, that shortens it up. I'm sure that's what it is. Okay. Then the root's two gutturals show either compensatory lengthening or virtual doubling, as in the PL. So hit ra'a gets compensatory lengthening. The basak is going to comets. And hit na chaim, that one's getting virtual doubling. In other words, with hit ra'ah, you would have had a pasak on the resh, but now it's because you can't double the aleph, the resh gets a comet. And with the other one, you can't double the chait, but that just got virtual doubling. In other words, nothing really happened, but you pretend that something did. Okay? In other words, it doesn't look any different. There's no dagation, there's no compensatory lengthening either. Okay, then D. What's that? Yeah, right. Or you just make your rule so that you've got this exception or something. You know, you can call it virtual doubling. You know, another guy could have written a book that said, either something happens or nothing happens. You know, and call the second category nothing happens. Okay. What do you call it? Virtual doubling. You know, just pretend that it was a doubling. It might help your concept. I don't know. Okay, D, final stem syllable may have pathak instead of seri. This is normal before guttural is optional elsewhere. So you're used to seri in the final syllable, but some of them will have a pathak. So hith anaf. Notice it's not instead of hith anaf, it's hith anaf. And normal before gutturals. Optional elsewhere. So if there's a guttural in the end and the very last of the word, it's quite normal for that. And that's not too surprising from what we've seen before. So that next example, hith wada, there you have an ayin at the end. So before the ayin, that seri changes to batha. But then the other example, hith anaf, that's optional.
Is wada, yada?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. Remember those
one yod, one wow.
Sometimes the wow comes back in, and it's usually in these places, these kind of verbs that happen, because
it's not changing place anyway.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any mention. Okay. Yeah, it's mentioned in the next in part E, the top of the next page. Roots with one wow, one yod. The original wow is sometimes preserved, as in if waka. To argue, hith wada, to make oneself known, and so forth. So contrast, hith yade, or hith yale, excuse me, to claim or declare a claim of pedigree, and hith yaetz, to conspire against, both with yod. So some of them will have yod, some of them have wow. Okay, that's the last bell, so we'll stop here, and tomorrow we'll finish up that exercise before we continue with this. I haven't got to meanings of these yet. That's one of the fun parts of hith file, is the meanings of them.
That's what people say. That's what I'm going to do.